Amen. You guys can take a seat. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here at Revision, and I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. Have any of you guys ever had an experience where you felt like Charlie Brown trying to play football with Lucy? Where you just can't help but think, you know what, I really should have seen that coming. I have those regularly as a parent. For instance, every single day when I tell my kids to go brush their teeth and they look at me like they've never heard those words put together in a single sentence before. Like, brush my teeth? What's that? That doesn't sound like something I want to do at all. And then I go upstairs 5 minutes later and they're fighting in a bedroom rather than brushing teeth in a bathroom. At some point I realize I got to stop being surprised at all that my kids can't get their teeth brushed without intense adult supervision. Or I had another one of those moments last week. I was laying on the floor reading to one of our twins, and the other one ran in behind me and yelled, "Daddy, I can jump over you. Watch." And 2 seconds later, as I felt the full weight of his body crashing down on my kidney, I thought, my first thought was, ah! And then my second thought was, I really should have seen that coming. As soon as I heard the word jump, I should have taken immediate evasive action. We should all have these moments in life where we wish we could have predicted the future. And how cool would it be if we could? Like, how awesome would it be to be able to hop into a time machine and go ahead and get an exact picture of what the future looks like? I think we all wish we could do that. And honestly, we've probably come closer to predicting the future than we even know in all of those moments where he said, I should have seen that coming. And we maybe even come even closer and nailed it sometimes at predicting other people's futures. Because we've all said at some point, you really should have seen that coming, right? We've said it to our kids, our coworkers, our boss, our neighbors, our friends, our spouse, in these situations where they're doing stuff and we can kind of see the train wreck that's about to happen in slow motion and they're completely oblivious. And then it happens, the thing that everyone knew was going to happen except for that one person, they're just shocked. Like, I can't believe she broke up with me, man. Really, you can't believe it? Because it feels like she's been breaking up with you for 2 months. Like, you're the only one that didn't know. Or people are like, I can't understand how I could have possibly gotten into this much debt. You really can't understand? Everyone else understands. You're the only one that doesn't understand. The process has not shocked any of the rest of us. We've all been there, in those spots where we can predict somebody else's future, even though they don't seem to know what's coming. And we've all had people predict our future while we were completely clueless. And it begs the question, why? Why does that happen? Like, what do they know that we don't know? And here's my crazy hypothesis. Nothing. I think it's just that when it comes to our own lives, sometimes we choose not to see. We don't want to believe it. Even though we can see it, we just look the other way. Sometimes we have a pretty good clue where things are going in a relationship or in a job or at school. We just choose to bury our heads in the sand because we want to believe that they aren't really going where we think that they're going. We can feel the direction of our lives morally, spiritually, relationally, financially, but something deep down inside of us wants to believe that that direction isn't going to end up in the destination it's headed towards. And so we just bet that it won't. And then it does every single time, and we're shocked, and we find ourselves saying, well, this isn't where I wanted to be. I really wish I would have seen this coming. We're kicking off a brand new series this morning at Revision. I'm really pumped up for what we're going to talk about over the course of the next month, because what we're going to learn is that you can see it coming. You can actually get a clear glimpse of your future if you'll just follow what Jesus says. I'm really pumped for this series. But I got to kick it off with some bad news. And it may be a little bit discouraging to hear right off the bat, but it also might explain why you're feeling how you're feeling, why you're going through what you're going through right now, why you're struggling with what you're struggling with. And I have good news coming later, so don't stand up and walk out after I deliver the bad news. But you ready for it? Here it is. Most of the mistakes you make can't be fixed. It's a real party killer, isn't it? I didn't expect applause, but a whole lot of your faces just went like this. But it's true. Most of the mistakes that you make in life can't be fixed, at least not in the way that other things get fixed. You can get your car fixed. You can get your roof fixed. You can get your phone fixed. You can get your refrigerator fixed. You can get your dog fixed. Actually, not that one. Scratch that one. That's a whole different ballgame. But there's a whole lot of things in life that you can get fixed, and after they're fixed, they're as good as new. It's like nothing was ever wrong, and you wouldn't know it at all. Take my car, for instance. Last summer, my dad borrowed my car, and he parked it at the bottom of a hill over a storm drain, and then he went inside his house to his home office that had a window looking out over that street and storm drain, and then a flash flood happened in Davenport, Iowa. And the storm waters rose above the trunk of my car and above the back windows of my car, and the whole neighborhood saw what was happening and just assumed he must not be home. And the guy who was sitting with a window looking at that car did not notice it at all. And it's one of those situations where I'd be kind of bitter and angry at my dad, except if you know my dad at all, I really should have seen it coming. And thankfully, since the car was on a hill, it just flooded the trunk and the back seat, so it didn't hit the electrical components or the engine, so I just got it fixed. It took some shampooing to make the smell go away, but now that the smell's gone away, you wouldn't know it. You'd have no idea that anything ever happened to the car. It's as good as new. And I have an observation to make about that that feels so simple, I don't want you guys to think it's condescending. I need you to know ahead of time, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence by saying it, but it needs to be said. You can do that with a car, but you can't do that with a human because you are not like a car. You're not like a computer. A computer has memory. You have memories. And that's a significantly more complex reality that can't be solved by calling an 800 number and having someone ask you, well, have you tried unplugging yourself for 15 seconds and then turning back on? It just doesn't work like that. When it comes to mistakes we've made, we can deal with them. We can cope with them. We can move past them in a really healthy direction. We can even use them as a bad example to teach our children later. I love telling people that who feel like they don't have any ability to serve in a capacity here at Revision Church. So you can always serve as a bad example. Everybody's got a spot to serve here. It's true. But it's important to understand our mistakes don't define us. They don't get to rob our future. Jesus promises us that, but they are a part of our past. Our mistakes don't get to write the final chapter of our story, but they're still a part of our story. So that's the bad news. Most of the mistakes you make can't be fixed. Here's the good news. Most of the mistakes you make can be avoided. And that's what this series is all about. How do we get from where we are right now to the lives we're desperately longing for? How do we get from the road that we're on to the path God has for us that leads to the life he promises us? And how do we avoid the mistakes and the pitfalls and the wrong turns that lead us away from there? That's what we're going to talk about over the course of the next month. And there's a really simple idea at the center of it that we're going to keep on coming back to again and again and again. And I call it the rule of the road. The rule of the road. And I'm going to tell you what the rule of the road is later on this morning. But first, I want to make sure we understand what I'm talking about when I say the word rule. Because I think we tend to hear the word rule and start thinking laws, like lists of do's and don'ts that we can either choose to follow or not follow. Like for most elementary school students, no chewing gum in class. That's a rule. And you should probably follow it if you're in elementary school, but you could also try to sneakily chew gum in class if you're a really crazy rebel or something like that. Or speed limits. Speed limits are the law. They tell us how fast we can go. And so the law says on most four-lane major roads that we have to limit our speed to 35 miles per hour. Unless you're Windsor Heights, then if you hit the gas pedal at all, a sneaky little car will take a picture of you and send you a ticket later. But in most places, right, that's the law. And these types of laws are laws that we can follow or not follow with varying degrees of consequence. But when I talk about the rule of the road, this isn't a rule like those rules. It's more like the rules of mathematics or the rules of science, like the laws of physics. It just is. It's a reality of how the world operates. And all the nerds and the med school students in here are thinking of those rules right now. They're like, oh, like the Pythagorean theorem, Descartes' rule of signs, Bernoulli's principle. Exactly. But for all the normal humans in here, let's talk about one we can all wrap our minds around. Newton's universal law of gravitation. That's a law. It applies to you whether you like it or not and whether you're aware of it or not. It just is. It's not a law like the law in the city of Des Moines that says no dancing between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. That's a real law. I learned that this week. I'm guessing people break it regularly, either because it's a stupid law or because they didn't even know that Des Moines had that law. But gravity, you can't decide to rebel against that one. This is just not an option. And it doesn't matter at all whether you know that it's a law. If you jump or fall off of something high, and if you're going to try that, for the sake of the rest of us, please get it on video. But if you jump or fall off of something high, there's only one result. You're going to hit the ground. It's how the world works. We didn't invent that. We just discovered it. And that's what I'm talking about when I say the rule of the road. It's a reality that you can leverage to your benefit or ignore at your own peril. And it was originally introduced to us a couple thousand years ago by Jesus. At one point early in his ministry, Jesus got up on a hillside and a whole giant crowd of people gathered around him. And he gave the greatest sermon that the world has ever heard. He absolutely destroyed the paradigm that everyone was living with. He gave them a bigger, better vision, a revision of who God is and who they were created to be. And then he closed that message by pointing them to the rule of the road. But Jesus illustrated that rule in a really Jesus-y way. He told a story. It's in Matthew chapter 7. So if you got a Bible with you this morning, you can open it up to Matthew chapter 7. If you don't have one, you can follow along in the Revision app or with the words on the screen. And if you don't own a Bible, we have a whole bunch of them for adults, for kids, for teenagers at the Next Steps table. Please take whatever you want before you go today. Those are our gift to you. So Matthew chapter 7, verse 24, Jesus has just blown everybody's minds and he's wrapping things up and he tells a story. And it's actually a story that's really familiar to all you churchy people who've grown up around church. But I want to invite you to kind of listen to Jesus' words with fresh ears this morning. He closes this sermon by saying, "Therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice," time out. That is so good. Like, this is so critical. Jesus looks at the crowd and he says, "Yo, I'm about to be done talking, so you guys all got to get this. Anybody who hears what I said and then actually goes out and does it, who lets the words that I just spoke move from their heads into their hearts and their hands and changes the way that they're living, and not just listens to me and says, 'Oh, that guy made some good points. I don't think I'm going to do anything about it, but he was entertaining, and I liked it. I'm going to do nothing.' But no, he says, anybody who hears it and does it, that's who I'm talking about." I think this is so important for us in our cultural context, because there are a whole lot of people out there in our world, a whole lot of skeptics, a whole lot of people with scars and hurts and wounds from the church that I meet every week, who have become convinced that religion boils down to, that Christianity boils down to showing up at a place where somebody stands up and makes you feel bad. And then you don't change, but you just do feel real bad. And people say, "Yeah, I'm pretty religious. I go every week, and preacher hits me hard. I don't do anything about it, but I do feel real bad, and I think probably the worse I feel, the closer I am to God." That is so weird, but it is so common. There's so many people who have had that experience with religion, and that is not the way Jesus operates at all. He said, forget about hearing this and feeling bad. My point isn't to make you feel shame and guilt over the places where you've fallen short. I want you to go out and do what I'm talking about, not because I need something from you, but because I want this for you. I don't want you to be the same person with the same faults and the same failures and the same struggles and the same frustration and the same guilt and the same shame 5 years from now that you are today. I want to bring transformation from who you are to the person I created you to be, from where you are to the place I have for you. And that transformation comes when you follow me in a new direction. So he preaches this incredible sermon, and he closes with these words. Hey, listen, anyone who hears these words that I spoke and puts them into practice will be able to go back to the past and fix all their mistakes. He doesn't say that. That's why you should bring your Bible. Sometimes I lie. That's not true. I lied. It's like, that's not what he says next. That's not how it works. That's how we wish Jesus closed it. Let's be honest. All of us are looking for a quick fix. Our entire lives in the United States of America are built around like finding solutions and finding the easiest way to fix something so that we can move forward. And if Jesus had closed by saying, hey, if you just do what I say, it'll be the quick, easy fix for all those problems, all that pain, all that frustration that you're feeling, we would be a lot more likely to actually do what he said. But that's not how Jesus closes, because he understands that's not how the world works. That's actually never the way Jesus closes. If you read all these stories about his life, what you find is that Jesus comes to broken people in the middle of our mess, and he never points us backwards by giving us a fix for our failures. He points us forward by giving us a direction toward our destiny. He doesn't point us back to fix the failures. He points us forward toward a totally different destination. He's continually inviting people to follow him in a new direction forward. And that's what he's doing at the end of this message. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Okay, so people who do what Jesus says are like the rock house guy, and then if you hear it but then you don't really do it, then you're like the sand house guy. And I don't know if you guys are anything like me, but I've always found this to be at least a mildly confusing simile. Like, I know which guy I want to be. I want to be the guy that still has a house. So it feels like it's better to do what Jesus says than not do what Jesus says. But is that the whole point that he's trying to make here? Just do what I say? Is that like the entirety of it? Or is there some sort of deeper connection between obedience and structural engineering that totally went over my head as a kid? There is. But we got to understand the cultural context to fully get what Jesus is saying here. And first things first, we gotta picture the situation correctly. I remember growing up as a kid in Sunday school, I had a Sunday school teacher named Sandra Funk, which is a killer name, by the way. And Sandra Funk was awesome, but technology was not awesome. And so we had to learn about the Bible on flannel graphs. Anybody in here ever flannel graphed it? It was a big blue flannel board, and you put the Bible characters on there, and I think they were flannel too, and they just stayed because of static electricity. Is that, I don't know the science, but they stayed. And Sandra Funk showed me this story, and I just assumed as a little kid that these two guys built their house in entirely different locations because they were on opposite sides of the blue felt square. I was like, oh, the smart guy, he built it up on the cliffs above the lake. And then the idiot was like, I want to be closer to the water, and he built it down there, and he got flooded. Of course you did. Water gets on things. I don't know. And this is what I thought as a little kid, but that's not what Jesus is actually talking about at all. In his story, and everybody who was listening to him got this, these two guys are building their house in the exact same location. They're like next door neighbors. And he's preaching this sermon in the Jordan River Valley. And both of these guys and everybody who lived in the Jordan River Valley understood something. And so these guys aren't a smart guy and a dumb guy. They're two guys who knew the same thing. It's just that one of them leveraged that knowledge wisely and the other one didn't. And here's what they knew. The ground in the Jordan River Valley is not covered with grass like Iowa. It's covered with sand, and it's a special type of sand called alluvial sand. And there's a very distinct dry season and rainy season. So in the summer, it's incredibly hot and not a drop of rain ever falls. As the months drag on, the alluvial sand bakes in the sun to the point that it becomes so hard it's almost rock-like. But if you want to build a house in the region near the Sea of Galilee, all these people know you can't be fooled into the rock-like hard surface. So you got to dig down through this sand that feels like steel. And dig and dig and dig. This is back-breaking, long, difficult, tiresome, hard work. You got to dig down 8 to 10 feet until you're certain you've hit the bedrock. And then you put the foundation of your house on the rock. But sometimes back then, people didn't want to do the hard work of digging all the way down to the bedrock because it took a really, really long time. And so they'd just build their house on top of the sand. Or more often what they do is dig down 2 or 3 feet and hit something that was pretty hard and figure like this will be good enough. And all three of those solutions actually work great until winter. In the winter, the rain comes fast and heavy. It swells the banks of the Jordan River, which flows into the Sea of Galilee, and the Sea of Galilee overflows its banks. And at that point, houses with a foundation built on alluvial sand suddenly have an unstable foundation. And they're prone to collapsing or being washed away entirely in a way that houses built on the bedrock aren't. They stand firm. And Jesus paints this powerful word picture, and everyone in his audience had seen it. They had seen houses stand through the floods, and they'd seen houses washed away through the floods of these two guys aimed in the same direction but getting massively different results. like one successful and one tragic. And we got to understand this morning. These two guys that Jesus is talking about in this story, they have the same information and the same destination in their minds. Like, here's two guys. I mean, one summer they're hanging out and both of them had wives that were like, can you just build us a beach house? I really want a beach house on the Sea of Galilee. And both of them were good husbands. So they're like, yeah, I'll do it. And then they did, and they both built the houses. Their neighbors and their families were hanging out all summer. They were playing volleyball and having picnics and taking the boats out. And then the winter came. And then they were in different spots because one guy was sitting in his house and his wife was looking out the window like, oh, the lightning looks really pretty over the lake. You are awesome. I love this house. And the other guy was standing outside in the storm with a wet wife looking at his house that fell over, and she was saying something to him other than you are awesome. I don't know what that was, but I do know that every married man in here just went like this. Give them the nod. Like, we know what happens when we cut corners and we do it wrong and it all blows up in our face and our wife finds out. It's not good. And then all of us have been in that spot. We know those moments where we don't quite do what we knew that we should have done, and then things fall apart and we look up and we're like, how did I get here? I really didn't want to end up here. I wish I would have seen this coming. I think the question for every single one of us is, why is it so easy and so common to end up in a place that we didn't want to go? Why are we left so often holding the broken pieces of our shattered dreams, just like the guy who built his house on the sand? And how in the world do we predict the future so that we can end up like the other guy? That's what Jesus is answering for us right here. See, both of these guys had the same dream. They had the same goal. They had the same destination in mind. They just took different paths to get there. And the problem is that only one of those paths actually led to that destination. Here's the rule of the road that I promised I was going to give you earlier. It's so simple. We're going to spend the next few weeks coming back to it. The rule of the road is this. Your direction determines your destination. Your direction determines your destination. It doesn't matter where you say you want to go. It doesn't matter where you dream about going. The place you will eventually end up is wherever the road you're on leads to. Like, we live in Des Moines, at the intersection of two of America's greatest and longest roads. You could be on one of them in 5 minutes, but I promise you this, I'll guarantee it. If you leave here this morning and you hop on I-35, you can drive till you hit another country, you will never reach Chicago. It's not a road that goes to that place. You can hop on I-80 and drive until your car plunges into an ocean, but you're not gonna hit Minneapolis. That road doesn't go there. And we get that with driving. I think we get it with hiking, too. Like, if you went to a national park and you really wanted to go up to see some, like, scenic vista lookout point, but then you read the map and it's like, that's a really long, strenuous trail. No one looks at the map and they're like, whoa, it says it's a short, easy trail, this one that's labeled waterfall trail. Why don't we take the short, easy trail to the high lookout? Because it doesn't go there. We wouldn't do that. We get it. It's the waterfall trail, not the lookout point trail. And it's easy to understand when it comes to driving. And it's easy to understand when it comes to hiking that we're going to end up wherever the path we're on goes. But in life, in life, it's really easy to convince ourselves that maybe if we just take the easy trail, maybe if we just this time we just follow the path of least resistance, maybe if we kind of follow Jesus and do some of the stuff he said, but also kind of just pioneer our own way, that'll get us to the same place. Right? All roads lead to the same spot. We'll get where God wants us. But here's the rule of the road. Your direction determines your destination. The best way to predict your future is to pay attention to where you're headed, not where you'd like to end up. You do have the ability. I have the ability. We all have the ability to travel ahead in time and see where we're going to be by being real honest with ourselves and with the people around us about where we're going. We got to look at the direction of our roads in every single aspect of our life, relationally, spiritually, academically, financially, morally. Like, the future for us is not as big of a mystery as we sometimes make it out to be. We end up wherever the road we've chosen leads us. That's the rule of the road, and it will apply itself to you whether you like it or not, whether you acknowledge it or not, and whether you decide to leverage it or not. And so my invitation this morning to everybody is this. If you really want to live a life of meaning and purpose, of peace and joy, of difference making and future creating, of forgiveness and wholeness and an unquenchable hope for the future, that I want to invite you to follow Jesus in a new direction forward. I want to invite you to follow him to the place God has for you, to the life that you were created for. I want to invite you to let the words of Jesus move from your head into your heart and your hands and change the way you're living and change the road you're walking down. Because if we do that, we'll get to the place God has for us. And I know that is way easier said than done. Like, it's an easy invitation to make from a stage. It's a hard thing to live out in our lives. If you guys struggle in the same ways that I struggle, it's pretty simple to convince yourself sometimes that you can mostly do that, but not all the way do that. That I can kind of apply the words of Jesus, but then kind of hang on to that secret sin that I don't want to talk about that I'm refusing to give up. That I can kind of do what Jesus says, but kind of not do it. That I can give, but not sacrificially. Jesus said to give, but I don't want to have to trust God more than I trust my money. I can be nice to everyone at school except her. She's the worst. Like, we just want to kind of do it. And believe that we're still going to get to the place God has for us. And most of us in this room, I'm convinced, have been trying that long enough that we know what happens. We end up in places that we never wanted to end up. And we say, how did I get here? I don't want to be here. I wish I would have seen this coming. And we can. We can see it coming. If we'll embrace the rule of the road and be honest about our direction. And if we don't do that, I'm convinced we're going to keep finding ourselves in places we never wanted to be, wishing we could have seen it coming. And if we decide right here and now that we're going to follow Jesus in a new direction forward, we'll get to the places he has for us. But I got to warn you, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. That doesn't mean it's going to be simple. That doesn't mean we're going to be free from pain and frustration. Paying attention to our direction, looking ahead to where we're going, not just where we want to be. Putting Jesus' words into practice, letting them move from our heads into our hearts and our hands and changing the way that we live. It's the best way to live, but it is not a simple way to live. Jesus said, if you hear these words of mine and you put them into practice, it's like a man who built a house. Building a house doesn't happen in a day, especially when you got to dig 10 feet deep into alluvial sand. That's a process. That's difficult, hard work. And even after he built the house, the rain still came and the floodwaters came up. He wasn't exempt from the storms of life. He was just better prepared to deal with them. This is a journey that lasts all our lives. And we're going to make mistakes and we're going to veer off the path sometimes. Every single one of us, most of us, every single day. But one of the things I love most about Jesus, one of the things that just blows me away about who he is in the middle of all of my failures, all of my mistakes, all the places where I've decided not to do what I know that he was telling me to do, where I've decided to take my own path and made huge errors in judgment. One of the things that just humbles me and amazes me is that Jesus' invitation to me and to you and to all of us is a one-word invitation. It's the same word that he used to invite people over and over and over again in his ministry. And that word wasn't change. Or fix, or stop, or be ashamed. The word was follow. Again and again and again, we read stories of Jesus meeting people right in the middle of their mess, people headed down the wrong road, just extending a single word invitation. Follow. Follow me. Follow me on a new path forward. From the place where you are to the place I created you for. From the road that you're on to the road that leads to the life in the future you were made for, follow me in a new direction forward. Your direction determines your destination. Follow me. Like, what if time travel really is that simple? What if it really is that easy to see where we're going and to get where we want to be, where God has for us? Just deciding, okay, Jesus, I trust you. I'm going to follow you. I think it is. Will you just pray with me? Jesus, thank you. Thank you for inviting us to follow you. We know that doesn't make life perfect and life simple and life easy. It doesn't mean we're going to avoid all the problems and mistakes and storms that come our way. We're just so grateful for the opportunity to follow a God who loves us enough to come and be real and be present in our lives, to step into our mess and not point us backwards towards the failures of the past, and not paint us with a brush that says sinner or says broken, and not close the book on our stories because of our failures, but instead invite us to just follow you forward in a new direction. We just thank you for that invitation. And we know, we confess that every single one of us has taken some wrong paths. Every single one of us has believed that we could come and listen to your words and not put them into practice and still get to the places you have for us. And we just ask your forgiveness for that. We pray that you'd open up our eyes to the direction that we're headed in. And you give us the courage and the confidence to follow you in a new direction forward, to follow you to life and hope and love and healing and forgiveness. And we just thank you for the invitation to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.